On this episode of Blue Dot, we talk to two of the many providers of science education on YouTube. It's a place that I love to go to find interesting and entertaining takes on the world of science. It's more fun than your average documentary. We talk to Joe Hansen from It's Okay to Be Smart and Jabril Ash from SEFD Science. It's all new and all blue next. Hey, Nolan, it's time for Science on the Tube. You've checked out some of our guests' videos. Do you enjoy learning about science while you're being entertained on YouTube?
I think that's one of the best ways to kind of interact with science these days.
Yeah, there have been some of the most fun guests we've had on Blue Dot have been content providers on YouTube. People like Phil Plait, the bad astronomer, and Diana Cowan, physics girl, and we're going to entertain ourselves with two more today. We're going to talk to Dr. Joe Hansen from It's Okay to Be Smart and Jabril Ash from SEFD Science. So let's get to it with Dr. Joe. Joe, welcome.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
You have a background, as you said, as a biologist, but what led you down the path exactly to doing science journalism, and what specifically, how did you get interested in doing video production?
Yeah, there's no one moment. It's kind of accidental. But I remember hearing over and over people say, I don't like science. And I've never believed that people don't like science. I just think that people haven't had it explained to them in a language that's meaningful, where they never had a good teacher. I love teaching. And when I got up in front of a class during grad school, I wanted that class to have fun, because if you're having fun, learning is so much easier. So I started turning my lessons into stories. And I would involve videos and multimedia stuff, because I think we're a storytelling species. I mean, that's how we've always learned things, going back to like cave paintings all the way to comic books and everything. And there's no better stories than science. So it was this natural progression from the classroom to writing online. And all of a sudden, I started playing with video. And you know, it's here I am today. It's just the evolution of that, telling stories about science.
And one of the things I enjoy about your videos is you do seem to really have a lot of fun when you're doing them. And that comes across in the videos. They're fun to watch because it seems like you're having fun. But it's also hard work, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really hard to call it work, because I know there's people who have to do like real work for a living, you know, working in mines and people who are on the front lines of things. But I just get to go out on the internet and be creative. So I'm very lucky. I do know that. But it isn't easy to figure out how to craft a story, to get all the information right, to put it in language that's easy to understand. Sometimes I have to understand it so much farther than what I'm going to end up explaining, and also make it entertaining while not dumbing it down. So it takes a lot of learning on my part, a lot of editing and iteration and working and tweaking. But nerding out is absolutely my favorite thing to do. So it might be hard work, but it's absolutely the most fun ever. Richard Feynman used to talk about this thing called the pleasure of finding things out. I'm all about that. I feel that every day.
You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio, and we're talking to Joe Hansen from the YouTube channel It's Okay to Be Smart.
Joe, it seems to me that YouTube has really exploded as a platform for all kinds of educational content, especially science. Why do you think it is such a good way to provide science outreach?
It really has. It has blown me away, the number of people that are out there making things and how many people are watching them. It really gives me hope for the future. But you know, there's a word in YouTube, which is you. And I might have more subscribers than somebody else, but everybody has the same access to ideas and the same ability to get their ideas out there. Everybody can put a video out and have people watch it, whether it's me or somebody sitting in their bedroom, which is awesome. And I think a lot of what holds people back from learning about science or accepting science is that fear or intimidation, feeling like they don't belong there. And YouTube has done a lot to put everyone on the same level, that it's not like this ivory tower speaking down to them, that it's people just like you and me that are talking to each other and making things for each other, that people can kind of learn in their own way, And we see things, we see stories that would never be told anywhere else, that couldn't fit on television and wouldn't fit in magazines. This has opened up completely new ways of sharing science. I don't want to pretend that that doesn't have downsides, because we all know that that can allow people to put misinformation out, really dangerous, bad science, things that can actually harm people. And you know, today it's become this whole like fake news thing. But I have a lot of faith, because science has been fighting fake news since like Galileo and Copernicus. So science has a lot of tools for fighting misinformation and getting the right, getting what is true and real out there. And I think that the more people we have putting science content out there, we can show people what is real and what isn't. And science is what tells us which is which.
Well, speaking of misconceptions, what would you say are some of the biggest misconceptions that you think people have about what you do?
Yeah, I actually work a little bit in like real journalism stuff, and I'm putting air quotes around that. And misconception, I think, on YouTube is still that what we're doing on YouTube is unimportant or simple, or is just like these random people doing who knows what down in their basement. But there are channels on YouTube that have bigger audiences than any TV show, except for maybe the Super Bowl. And that's incredible. People have been able to create things and get instant feedback from their fans and people who are interested in the same things as they are. And everybody should be paying attention to that, because scientists especially, because there's so much potential there to reach people on a personal level, on an even level, and really create things that speak to them.
How many subscribers do you have now, approximately?
We recently cracked 1 million subscribers, which totally blows my mind. To try to picture what all of them would look like in one place, but it's incredible. It's so encouraging and motivating, and fuels us to keep making new things that we have. We have a great responsibility when you have 1 million people listening and more. But it motivates me to do better and ask better questions and make better videos every week.
One of the things I like to point out to people that haven't really dialed into the YouTube science revolution, as I like to call it, is the production values are as good or better than anything you're going to see on television.
It's totally true. I mean, have been benefits of technology just like anyone else out there in so many other media and you know, fields across the world. You know, it's so much more accessible for us to get good cameras and the software. And there's 15-year-olds who can edit videos way better than I can. And it's just amazing to see how greater access to this technology has given people the tool to not only be creative, but to share their knowledge in completely different ways than we've ever seen before. It's really incredible.
Typically, how long does it take to go from inception to completion of a video? Like from when you first get an idea of what you want to do to getting the thing completely produced and uploaded?
It can really vary. The video is ready when it is ready, when the information is as good as it can be. We got to schedule everything, but it can take anywhere from 2 weeks to 6 months. It's all different. When I'm building ideas, I think of it like I'm building a body, that I start with a skeleton of pure facts, and this is what I want people to learn. And then we start laying down the muscle and the organs of the interestingness and the humor and what we can connect this to, and then we try to make it look pretty by putting skin on it so nobody's freaked out and runs away from this skinless weird creature. That can take any number of months, depending on the video, just till we get it right.
Where do you get the inspiration for ideas for video topics? And has that changed at all over time, since you've been doing this? Where do you get your ideas from?
Well, I can't give you all my secrets, but, I'm always trying to figure out how things work.
So do you have some secrets, some places you pull these things? You don't have to tell us, but you have like...
I mean, I definitely have some favorite inspiration places on the internet, and some people I greatly admire, some communities that I greatly admire, that are curious and intelligent, and they do feed me. So When I'm reading all the time. I'm always asking myself questions. I spend most of my day reading and learning about things, asking why and how. And it could be anything from like a weird bug that I saw in my backyard to trying to understand some fundamental principle of the universe. I'm just trying to always, I have this insatiable need for knowledge. And that is what has driven this from the very beginning. I'm sure I was a really annoying child. Hopefully that's led me to a good place. The difference is now that I just write these questions down and try to build stories around them and make videos about some of them. But it is a lot of reading. So there's a couple things I believe really strongly in. That one is that individual genius is highly overrated, maybe doesn't exist, and that connections are very, really important. So individual genius is just not really how things come to be. Even when you look at people like Newton, Einstein, Charles Darwin, you know, they were building on previous ideas. So we just never heard about their influences because they just got so much more famous than their influences. But we love this idea that there are like ideas just pop out of the ether. But all of us stand on the shoulders of giants. I read amazing authors and scientists and journalists out there that plant little seeds in my brain. And one day, it's like a beautiful mind. Lines connect between all of these things. I'm like, I've got a video right there all of a sudden. And that's the second thing, is that I love looking for connections between things, whether it's science and movies or things that I love, or how some artist or piece of music can teach us about something, or how I can make a joke or work in weird history about something. All these things we don't typically think of as being part of science, because the more things we tie science to, I think the more valuable it becomes. And then we see how it ties into everything.
It seems like post-election science feels a little bit under siege. Do you feel that way at all? And if so, how do you go about finding positive ways to push back against the anti-science platform of the incoming administration, and specifically with climate change, which you've addressed on your channel?
Yeah, we are in a bit of a truth-challenged time. But like I said earlier, this isn't new to us in science. I mean, science has been fighting this battle for a long time, and it is a constant battle. If we let down our guard and stop fighting for what is actually real and true, then we can allow these anti-science forces not only to just, you know, not show people the wonder of the world. I mean, this is great too, but there's honest danger here, whether it's vaccines or whether it's the risks of our changing climate and disappearing species. But science has tools for this, and this is why I have a lot of hope and am able to remain optimistic in these times. You know, the human brain is very weird. It's a file cabinet full of ideas, and when one gets challenged, I think most people's typical action is what we call confirmation bias. You want to find things that agree with you, and that's the root of people that are anti-science. It's not that people are stupid. It's just that when something challenges you at your very core, it pulls this rug out from underneath your reality. That can be really, really shocking. You know, imagine when we were telling people that we're not the center of the universe. I mean, they wanted to literally burn people to stake for these things. So when you're trying to shatter the way somebody looks at the world, that can be scary. And we have to remember that and treat that with respect. So that doesn't change the fact that some things just aren't true, no matter how much you want them to be true. You know, science isn't perfect. It's made mistakes, but it allows us to show people what is true. It allows what is true to rise to the top. And I think science has learned to be comfortable in that space where something conflicts. There's that conflict in your head that's pulling you in both directions, and you're in that scary moment of replacing an idea with something new. And you get comfortable with that idea. And that's what science gives us, a system of dealing with, of replacing old ideas with better ideas once we prove them true. So science can lead us in this time, and I have a lot of hope for the future.
You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. We're talking to Joe Hansen. He's the content creator of It's Okay to Be Smart on YouTube. Can you give us any tips on upcoming topics or videos in the near future?
We have a lot of cool stuff coming up this year. We are going to be working on some videos around CRISPR and gene editing. We're going to be looking at a little series about the history of humans, looking at our genomes and how we've learned where we came from and what the heck happened to Neanderthals. We've got some collaborations with some of our favorite channels. We're going to continue opening people's eyes to climate change and the way our world is changing because of humans and the way that it's changing because of automation and robots and artificial intelligence. And we're going to keep showing you weird animals from the rainforest and places like that. So it's going to be a fun year.
Joe Hansen, thanks so much for joining us on Blue Dot.
Thank you guys for having me, and stay curious, everybody.
That's Joe Hansen, host and producer of It's Okay to Be Smart on YouTube. You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. When we come back, we'll talk to Jabril Ash. He's a YouTube content provider with the channel SEFD Science. And we're back talking to Jabril Ash. He's the content provider for SEFD Science on YouTube.
Jabril, thank you for joining us on Blue Dot today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How did you first get interested in producing science content?
It all started a couple years back. I have always had this lust to, you know, talk about science and latest breakthroughs and, you know, newest technologies and whatnot. But my group of friends, that isn't really stuff that interests them. So I started watching a bunch of communication channels on YouTube, like Vsauce and Physics Girl and X, Y, and Z, and I really enjoyed their content. However, because I didn't have any sort of background in a lot of stuff that they were covering, they would use like big jargon and all these words that I didn't understand, or I'd have to pause the video and look up what this word means. And so I wanted to create a channel that accomplishes, you know, the same type of communication that they were accomplishing, but making it very simplistic, very layman's as possible, so the viewer doesn't have to do what I had to do, which was like pause the video and look up these words and X, Y, and Z. So I just really want to create a platform that was education and science on the simplest understanding possible.
What was one of the first topics that you tackled in that approach?
The first topic that I tackled was cockroaches. Should we get rid of cockroaches? I don't quite remember what inspired me to cover that video, but I remember having so much fun just researching all these different articles and studies on cockroaches and watching a bunch of documentaries and gathering all this information and then putting that into a package, a video package with a bunch of visuals and, you know, my own unique perspective to present on YouTube. That was so fun. And then from there, I was like, okay, this is definitely something that I want to do.
Well, as someone intimately involved with producing content on YouTube, what have you found to be some of its strengths and some of its shortcomings?
Some of the strengths, without a doubt, producing content on YouTube is that it's readily available to anyone to grab just, you know, as simple as a cell phone camera and start recording a show. That is probably the biggest strength. You don't have to go through all these different branches of executive power to get a certain budget to shoot this one thing. But at the same time, the same thing that strengthens the platform, I think it also hurts it, because there's a lot more filth out there, you know, and there's a lot of people that may not have the intention of spreading actual education and science, but more so to try and fill their pockets with, you know, money. And it gets kind of confusing at times to really get to the bottom of like, what is this person's intention?
And you collaborate a lot. Tell us about some of the people you most enjoy working with, especially Diana Cowern, aka Physics Girl. How did you get involved with her work, and what do you do?
So I first got involved with Diana it was last year. I had started my educational channel, and I just reached out to a bunch of people within the space. I was letting them know, like, hey, this is my new channel. This is what I'm trying to accomplish, and if any of you guys need help, please reach out to me. I'm willing to help. And it was just good timing with Diana and I, because she had just let go of her old editor, and she was looking for a new one. And then she had watched a couple of episodes that I produced, and she was like, I really enjoy what you're doing. Please come work with me. Here's an offer. And I was like, oh, yeah, definitely. And so that took off from there. And I think that she might be my favorite person to collaborate with, mostly probably because we live in the same city, and it's really easy to, you know, share different ideas and get really deep into different topics. Not to mention, like, she's really, really passionate about pretty much any topic that you present to her. So she makes things a lot of fun to as a collaboration.
Nowadays, we live in a world where everyone's connected to the internet. Everyone's clicking through tons of clickbait articles, watching short videos or GIFs or whatever it is. But your videos, something that stands out about them is that they go a lot longer, sometimes out to 20 minutes long. What are the challenges of keeping people engaged with videos that long, and what's your reasoning for doing videos that long?
One of the reasons why I enjoy creating longer content, which is, you know, 15, 20, sometimes even 30 minutes long, is because I've always enjoyed watching documentaries. And in fact, that's probably like the only thing that I do watch is a bunch of documentaries. And so I've always wanted to keep that documentary type of aspect to the content that I create. And how I keep people engaged with such a long runtime, I don't really focus on that. As weird as it sounds, I've always went into it with the whole idea of, like, I'm going to create content that I like and try and find an audience that enjoys the same stuff that I like, which has been proven to be a good model. Obviously, it's working out well. And I'm very grateful for that as well.
And what are some of the science topics that you've most enjoyed doing videos about?
Ooh, I always love anything that deals with, like, future tech or artificial intelligence. Those are hands down my favorite. In fact, I have this really crazy, crazy, crazy AI project that I want to do within the next year or so. But, there's this thing with, like, creators in which, like, they have this dream project, and I feel like it's always, the answer should always be just do it and learn from it. But a lot of creators have this dream project and they just sit on it for so long to the point where it never actually happens. And that's kind of the effect that I'm going through with this one. But I think I'm just going to do it and just, you know, if it doesn't turn out exactly like my vision, so be it. Just learn from it, right?
You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. I'm Dave Schlom along with Nolan Ford, and we are talking to Jabril Ash, creator of the YouTube channel SEFD Science.
What would you say is the biggest misconception that people have about science?
I think probably the biggest misconception with science is that people think that you have to be, you know, some extraordinary genius to understand the concepts of science, specifically physics. Even I had the same perception as well. But when you start to learn about, you know, what is light and wavelengths and red versus ultraviolet and stuff like that, it's not as complex as it sounds. It's actually pretty simple. You just have to sit down and commit to wanting to learn, you know, the differences between all this stuff. I think that's probably the biggest misconception, though.
That's a really good answer, and that actually speaks volumes about your YouTube page, which really makes, you know, seemingly impossible concepts to understand really accessible to people. And I think that's probably, you know, why you're successful.
Hey, I thank you for that, man. I thank you for that.
You're welcome. And you also like to explore social science intersections with science. Is that a deliberate thing or something that really interests you?
It's definitely not deliberate. I think that this channel really has helped me out with understanding and learning who I am as a person, because pretty much every single episode that I produce, it's all based on observations or some sort of commentary that I want to put out there. And, you know, just like the example that you're saying right now, looking back at the archives that I've created, I think that speaks volumes to what I find important, right? Because time is finite and there's no way that I can talk about everything. So I talk about what's important to me. So to answer your question, it's definitely not deliberate, but it is teaching me, you know, what I care about.
So you do a lot of different kinds of things. Do you find it difficult to stay focused on one thing at a time?
Oh, absolutely, man. That's probably my biggest struggle, without a question. The issue for me is everything is fascinating. You know, someone could walk in here with a fire hydrant and convince me that a fire hydrant is the most interesting thing in the world. Like, it's possible. And then for 2 weeks, I'll be fascinated with, you know, some component of a fire hydrant. It's an issue that I'm trying to figure out how to deal with, because I have it creates like a focus problem for me. But I believe that I'll find a solution for all my crazy focus issues.
Could you give us a sense of a lot of the different types of projects you are interested in? Because you do games, and you do prank videos, and you have your science channel. You've got a lot of different irons in the fire.
Games is something that was probably my first passion. When I was about 11 or 12 or something, I picked up coding, programming. And I started writing little 2D games, and it was a lot of fun, and it was a great time to pass the time. And went into high school, and I got into filmmaking. And then slowly after that, I got into making websites and what else? I want to learn engineering someday. It's a mess, man. It's honestly a mess. And you know what's interesting is, like, this is a battle I've been facing for the past, I don't know how many years, but I every time it always comes full circle, and I understand that, like, this is who I am. You know, I can't do anything about this. And so what I've been focused on recently, instead of trying to figure out how to focus on one thing, I've been focusing on how can I create some sort of system in which allows me to be able to focus on a bunch of different things at once. And the current solution that I'm looking into is I'm working on developing an app that works a lot like a social media, in which you can log on and then it will give you a feed of, like, all the latest stuff. So, like, Ceph Games, Ceph Science, Ceph Pranks, what have you, right? And so it sends all traffic to one place, and then from there they can decide what they want to see and what they don't see. Because I don't know how to fix my focus issue beyond that.
For someone who wants to visit your channel for the first time, what would be a video or two that you would suggest to get a taste of your channel?
I always suggest the Star Wars episode, which is Star Wars happening in our universe, just because I believe it's a very fun and it digs into different aspects of different science practices, and there's no real one side versus the other. So I always like to suggest that one.
Well, Jabrillo, it's been really fun to talk to you.
Likewise. This was a lot of fun. I thank you guys for the opportunity.
Thanks to our guests, Dr. Joe Hansen from It's Okay to Be Smart and Jabril Ash from SEFD Science. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Follow us on Twitter at NSPR News and me at Dave Shlom. Thanks to co-producer Nolan Ford, who enjoys watching YouTube videos that are educational. And he and I remind you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.